Hey everyone, welcome to Gym Class Strength, the podcast about American physical education. Today's guest is Will Fleming. Will is a weightlifting and sports performance coach based in Bloomington, Indiana. He's the founder of 1 Kilo, a weightlifting club that caters to novices and Olympic hopefuls alike. As an athlete himself, Will owns 9 national records in masters weightlifting. He was the 2019 world champion in the 35 to 39 age group at 89 kilos. And before becoming a full-time coach, Will was an All-American at Indiana University and an Olympic trials qualifier in the hammer throw. Will is the author of numerous books and articles pertaining to weightlifting and strength and conditioning, as well as a sought-after speaker on the topics. In this podcast, we talk about developing a love of movement in young weightlifters, long-term athletic development, the place weightlifting occupies in sports, and the reasons high school coaches and teachers should include it in their programming. Will is really a wealth of knowledge. We're really lucky to have him on the podcast. I've known Will a long time. He is definitely a candid interview and somebody that we can all learn from. So one of the goals that I had for starting this podcast was to bring the knowledge of people like Will into physical education spaces, because all students, regardless of their interest in high school sports, deserve this level of care and detail when we talk about their long-term athletic development. With that said, thanks again to Will, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. All right, Will. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Gym Class Strength podcast. I feel like I'm sort of stealing your time here, because us lowly PE teachers are looking up to strength coaches like yourself, but I really appreciate the time.
Well, I'm really excited to be here. You're not stealing my time at all. I just have kids now, and it's difficult for me to nail down anything concrete in a schedule anymore. It's become terrible.
So. Sure, and that's actually a perfect segue. I figured we would just start there, because you and I both sort of were bouncing around with kid obligations, and we talked about sort of what we wanted to talk about. And certainly from the PE perspective, we're dealing with a younger population than some of the athletes you're coaching. So I guess I would ask you, in a perfect world, what does the roadmap look like for your own kids in terms of their physical development?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I want them to just love physical movement, right? Like just like love it in all of its forms. So, you know, like establishing really, really positive emotions, positive feelings, like about like playing, you know, games that they can play, you know, whatever, right? However we do it, like, I kind of think about the idea of like that at their age now, and you know, like my oldest son is 5. He'll be 6 next May. So he's like 5, he's 5 and a half. And he, you know, I just want him to like, at this age, you know, like play, I would love it if he made up, you know, making up games. Like that's, that's a cool one. Right.
Right.
Like I actually found this cool website so I was a hammer thrower. That's how I met you, right? I was a hammer thrower at Indiana University, and I'm, you know, big track head, and I'm a big like field events guy, throws guy. My dad was a shot putter. My brother was a Big Ten champion in the shot put. I was a, you know, state champion in the shot put, and then threw the hammer in college. So I love track and field. So I actually went out and I found this website that sells kids discuses, right? And it's got little hand holds and finger grips and stuff like that on the discus to teach them how to throw it. And it had like 500 gram hammers, which were like plastic balls and really soft rubber handles on a rope and stuff like that. And I was like, sweet, you know, my kids are going to get this, but nobody's ever thrown the hammer or discus normally in our house. Now it's like different games. It's like throw it and we race each other to see who can get it first, you know, stuff like that. So
sure.
I just like this idea that every time that they do something physical, that they have fun doing it. You know, that positive idea, because I did, you know, and I had really positive experiences with physical activity, and, you know, now I'm 38 and I'm still very physically active, you know, I'm healthier because of it and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, not many people are going to end up being a professional athlete or anything like that. So
sure.
The idea of making sure that they end up being active for life is a big thing that I want to see out of them, you know?
Yeah, and so it's interesting. I think every coach that I respect and everyone pretty much that I've talked to says a very, you know, has a similar answer in the sense that, hey, I don't really care if my son or daughter does the sport that I did. I want them to love what they do. I want them to be healthy. So where do we go so far off the tracks on that one? Because it seems like when I look around, people are saying one thing, and then we sort of live in this super specialized youth sport world.
Well, you know, it's so I coach exclusively Olympic weightlifting now. And you know, if the time permits or the conversation ends up going there, you know, I'll tell you why I would do that from an athletic perspective, why I chose to do that. But we coached a ton of kids at my gym that I own for over 10 years called Force Fitness and Performance. And I own that and I sold it. But when we coached, one of our groups was this youth population, and we would coach kids in like sixth grade, like start teaching the fundamentals of strength training, all that kind of stuff. You know, movements, how to run and jump and land and skip and stuff. And kids come in at all different levels at that age, right? You know, they're coordinated. There's just so many factors going into it. But by that age, yeah, I would get a lot of parents who bring their kid in and be like, hey, so, you know, so-and-so wants to be, you know, is going to be a baseball player. He's a pitcher. He really, you know, he wants to play in the major leagues. And it's like, what, you know, right. how do we even decide that? Like, when I was 12, you know, I thought that my favorite sport in the world was baseball.
Oh, and I was going to play for the Yankees.
Yeah, I didn't play baseball after my freshman year of high school. Right. Like there's so many things that go into it and you know, not just talent, you know, it's like not even talent and hard work. It's like their mindset, the coaches they may run into, what their friends do, you know, what their other interests are, all those sorts of things. I do tend to think that there's like parents get competitive with other parents and see what so-and-so's kid did. And it's almost like what comes first, the chicken or the egg? And it's like, so-and-so's kid did this, so my kid's going to do that, right? And you see that in like little social circles that I think starts to propagate itself and grow and all that kind of stuff. Because, and it's hard to reconcile because there is so much information and so many smart people and so many like scientific studies say, and so many professional athletes say, I played all the sports, I did everything growing up, but once you start whittling it down, you get into really small things. You know, you get these influential, you get an influential basketball instructor who says, well, you know, the next step is to play on my select AAU team, and we have this season.
And then, just one thing rolls right in.
Yeah, right. And the baseball, the hitting instructor says, you know, we really need to be playing on my travel team. And that fee is this, and that fee is this. And, you know, you should add this part. And, you know, for only the low price of this, you can also do this. And then you're definitely going to get a scholarship because that's what so-and-so did, you know. So right. It's just like, you know, we get all this big information, but when it comes down to it, people do what their immediate circle does. You know what I mean? Like,
no, absolutely. It's sort of the low hanging fruit. And here's one of my theories is that when we have this very defined structure for kids, mm-hmm. it makes training and it makes our schedules very streamlined, which I think it's sort of like this false sense of simplicity, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have a baseball player and I'm going to trade, you know, and now as a coach, I could say, well, you need to train these specific attributes, right? It makes my life very, very simple because I'm training him to play mm-hmm. baseball. Yeah. When we take a big step back, you know, I think, and this is where I want to get into the long-term athletic development conversation, you know, the initial knee-jerk reaction, I think, is randomness, which is what we see in PE, right? Yeah. Who even cares what we're doing? We, you know, and I'm picking on, you know, probably the bad examples, but, you know, one day's ultimate frisbee, the next day's capture the flag, throw some basketball in there. Oh, hey, it's raining. Do whatever you want. And I don't think that's the answer either.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is the long-term for a lot of reasons that I like, that's basically why I started the podcast was being frustrated with that. Right.
Yeah.
But what is your approach to a more appropriate long-term athletic development?
Okay. Yeah, perfect. And you know, for real long-term athletic development, like concepts, there's a book by Istvan Balye called Long-Term Athletic Development. It's the textbook about it. It's incredible. Istvan Balye also wrote or was the consultant on Canadian Sport for Life, which was a kind of a project by Athletics Canada, or maybe their Canadian Olympic committee or whatever, put it together. And it is like a shortened version of long-term athletic development, but you have different stages. And, you know, the kind of the big thing with that sort of, if you look at an age group, and Balye does this really well, and I'm going to throw some out, but I haven't read it in depth in a couple years, so I may put the wrong things at the wrong time. But like, let's say like you want some competencies, right? Like kids who are like 6 to 9 years old should be able to like throw a ball, watch a ball, catch it. They should be able to catch it in different spots, right? They should be able to catch it like over their right shoulder, over their left shoulder, low, you know, to the right, to the left, you know, whatever, right? And on one foot, and they should be working on balance, and they should work on all these different kind of core competencies, right? But the best way to like uptake those is like still through gameplay, right?
So absolutely,
you kind of like a really great friend of mine, a guy named Dave Gleason, who is like probably my like the guy when it comes to you know, coaching little kids. He has like this killer gym up in Massachusetts where he coaches like a ton of like 6 to 9 year old kids, and then because of that they end up, you know, being 10 to 13 year olds in his groups and 14 to 18 year olds, so he coached them for a long time. But he says you skill it and then you thrill it, right? So you teach them the skill, right? And then you make it a thrill, you make it exciting, right? So you skill it and then you thrill it. So you teach the skill, then turn into something exciting. So like if it's like catching, if catching the hand-eye coordination of catching something, and it doesn't have to be like catching a baseball in a baseball mitt, you know, it could be tossing tennis balls underhanded, catching in two hands, one hand, whatever, right? You play games where it's like, you know, basically like the rules of Ultimate Frisbee with a tennis ball or something, right? And they can only catch with one hand, or they can only catch with two hands and all that kind of stuff. So you take those competencies, and then you like, you know, as you progress, they are more... they are part of a game, right? And then additionally, you start introducing the, you know, like you, like a classic gym class, right? We're going to have a unit on softball, baseball, soccer, whatever, right? We're going to have this unit on it, and we're going to teach the kids how to play that. And then so those skills kind of go into these fun games, and then they go into more structured games, and you teach these things. But all in all, what we're trying to do is just create this physical literacy, right? And that's like a tenet of long-term athletic development, is that we let kids, we are very, very in tune with this idea that kids should be literate in English, and they, or you know, and they should be they should know arithmetic, and they need to know this by this age and all that kind of stuff. But it's not common that at each age, there is a group of things that you, or a group of skills that you want to make sure those kids learn, right?
Right.
You know, I suppose it's, you know, first grade or maybe even kindergarten now, your kids learn addition, right? Second grade, they learn this. Third grade, they learn this, right?
Right.
We have, you could go through the whole list on math, you know, language arts, you know, English, whatever. But in physical education, that is less common in the, you know, classic sense. I haven't taught physical education, nor have I been in those kind of classes.
I can tell you from experience. I mean, I know that those, you know, those standards, at least in the state of California, those standards certainly exist. But I think where we go wrong is that we to borrow your phrase, which I'm going to just steal now. We either skill it or we thrill it, right? So
yeah.
So I see teachers who have these 5-year-olds, and they're doing this super structured. Okay, you know, we're 3 steps apart, and you're going to toss this ball, and the kids are just bored to death.
Yeah,
and they're like, "Let me just play," right? Or we go, "Here's some sponges soaked in water, and you can throw them, and your friends will get wet, and it's hilarious," you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But are they like, you know, are they learning the skill then that you intended for them to learn?
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I guess I would say that mix and match is what I see it's lacking. So, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it really is. It feels like a delicate balance at times between, again, you have the very structured, overly structured program, or you have the overly random program, or you have, this direct instruction, or you have, just sort of free play. And I want to get back into the weightlifting side of things, because that is the avenue that you've chosen. And it seems like you've chosen it from, novice all the way up to, potentially looking at qualifying for the Olympic Games type athletes. So why weightlifting? So let's look at this topic through that lens, because I think, and again, this is a long question. I think most people would look at weightlifting and say it's only appropriate for someone who's, in college or later.
Yeah. So just, competitive weightlifting, snatch and clean and jerk, as it's like contested in Olympic Games, as a sport, is a really cool idea, because it's a very high skill sport, right?
Most people don't. Well, I mean, a lot of people understand it, but not enough people.
Yeah, I mean, you would think about it. Like, it's not powerlifting, it's not squat, bench, and deadlift, right? Lifting, kind of maximal weights and squat, bench, and deadlift is almost the opposite, right? That's slow strength, right? Just creating force and stuff like that. Whereas this is more like power, but it's also really high skill, really, really technical, and so the way I entered to teach it, right, is kind of some competencies, right? The athlete, we need to know how to squat, right? Body weight. We need to know how to squat an external load, whether that's a medicine ball, a sandbag, a kettlebell, whatever, and maintain a good position. We need to learn how to hip hinge, which is, dissociating your hips from your upper body is like a fairly complex idea for kids at a certain age, right?
It's certainly one that I've struggled to teach.
Right. Yeah. It's a very, very difficult thing, right? You just get back benders or knee benders, right? But it's very hard for kids to kind of hip hinge, move their hips in space, anything like that. So, they need to jump and land and be able to create force, jumping and all that kind of stuff. And so we have these ideas, those are the prereqs. So that's the first thing we're kind of doing. But then, I teach the lifts as if I'm teaching a sport, right? So what I do is PVC pipes or 5 kilogram bars or, 10 kilogram bars. So we're talking 5 or 11 pounds, 20 pounds, right? Or 22 pounds. And we're just teaching it. And what I'm trying not to do is, create any sort of what I would do with an older athlete is I would try to, get them to get stronger, right? That is one way to get better. All I'm trying to get with these kids is I'm trying to get them better, more, familiar with the skill. And it usually looks like, warm up and some sort of game, spatial awareness, like we throw, throwing a ball, catching a ball, all that kind of stuff. Then moving into might look like, overhead squatting with a dowel or a light bar or whatever's appropriate for their age and skill level. And then moving into practice with the actual lifts. And it's that's always different too, because I'm trying to piece it together. So I'm teaching them different parts while letting them still have some early success, right? So it might be snatches from the hip as opposed to from the floor or something like that. So, and I teach kids from the youngest kid I've ever started teaching was 8 or 9 years old. His mom is Polish. And she came to me one time. She said, "I need you to teach my son to lift weights." And I was like, "Oh, like squat and all that." She goes, "No, snatch and clean and jerk. Every child should learn to snatch and clean and jerk when they are a kid." And I was like, "Sounds great, I love
that." Best possible client ever.
Yeah. But we started with a stick, he is actually going to the youth net. He's 11 now, and he's going to the youth national championships this, in December. He'll do well largely because there's not a lot of 11-year-olds that lift. But because he does the lifts well, like he knows how to overhead squat, and he knows where to put the bar and stuff like that. But it hasn't become an exercise in like strength or anything like that yet. It's, you know, it's just, yeah, it's just like,
and that's,
does he remember how to do it some days, you know?
Right. And so that's my next question. I just want to sort of head people off at the pass here, because you can almost hear the coaches protesting already, like 11 years old lifting weights. Can you sort of quickly dispel some of the myths around?
Yeah, I mean, so the
you know,
whole
kids lifting, because that's still something. Yeah. I mean, even with high school kids that I'm fighting, and to be honest, I think I might have heard it on your podcast actually, yeah, comparing the forces that you're generating jumping off of of a slide to a squat are not even close.
I mean,
I'm not trying to steal your thunder.
No, exactly, right. So we normalize a lot of things, and for some reason, like lifting weights is still like abnormal. And you know, certainly if a kid lifts weights poorly, it's a bad outcome, but if a grown-up lifts weights poorly, it's a bad outcome, right? You know, so it's like so you know, that all things being equal, there's nothing dangerous about it. The you know, the stunts your growth, it'll hurt your growth plates. Like growth plates like get hurt in car accidents, right? Like people like stunt their growth if they break a long bone in a car accident, that can like break the growth plate. You know, a lift, you know, goblet squatting a kettlebell or snatching a 10 kilo bar is not going to do that kind of stuff. But yes, absolutely, like the forces from you know, if we look at stuff like depth jumps, we're talking multiple times body weight. And you can compare a depth jump to a kid jumping off of a slide, or a kid jumping off jumping out of a swing, all that kind of stuff. You know, we're talking multiples of body weight when the kid lands, and we're referring to a kid, you know, squatting 20 kilos or anything like that as dangerous. So kids are much more resilient in terms of like, you know, the loading. They're very strong and stuff like that. But we, and you know, if you kind of look at it further, it's so normal for kids to play, you know, people won't bat an eye putting a 8 and 9 year old in a helmet and shoulder pads, right?
Right.
Where it looks like an apple, you know, an apple on top of a toothpick, you know, their necks are so skinny at that age, and saying, yeah, we're going to, my kid's playing tackle football at age 9, but you know, heaven forbid that kid learns to squat with external load, you know, it's like, you know, so it's like, that is such a myth, been dispelled so many times, you know, but the problem is it is actually, you know, it's still like insidious and kind of is out there, where like, you know, physicians, pediatricians will just kind of routinely say that, you know, and it's like, what do you mean? Like they where it's just like, you can find so much literature, you know, just pull up Google Scholar or ResearchGate and like do, you know, resistance training children. And it's like, you're going to find nothing but like, it's fine. Right. You know, it's like, you know, so anyways.
Yeah. So with that sort of as our given, and unfortunately we're still battling this in physical education, and luckily I'm at the high school level where I get less of it, but you still do see some of it. But with that as a given that it's something that we should be doing, what are a couple of your tips that you would give to coaches who are looking to coach larger groups in some of these more complicated lifts? Or would you do it, or would you replace it with something like a med ball throw, kettlebell swing?
Oh gosh. Like that. Yeah. So, okay. So if we're talking about, I would use like multiple different types of load, right? You know what I mean? Like, so if we're talking about, we can throw medicine balls, we could teach, you know, we could throw, teach kettlebell swings, you know, medicine ball throws are just like incredible, right? Like in terms of the power output and all that kind of stuff. So they're super duper valuable. And it's really hard to kind of screw up a medicine ball throw unless like
it's sort of self.
Yeah. Yeah. Except unless you like let it land on someone, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
When we throw medicine balls, I say like, what's the first rule? And the first rule is don't hit yourself in the head, right? Something like, you know, but yeah, medicine ball throws are great. You know, like just having different implements, if you have the resources to do it, so that you can do all sorts of, you know, different types of movements, you know, kettlebells, medicine balls, I'm a, like, sandbags are really, you know, they're a lot of fun and kind of a cheap implement to use and stuff like that.
Would you move toward Olympic lifting at some point? Because I know there's sort of a, you know, for a long time, you know, football players power clean, mm-hmm. right? Or at least hang clean. And then I feel like in the last probably, I don't know, 5 to 6 years, people have started to say, well, maybe you could do trap bar jumps, or you could do, like we're saying, kettlebell swings, or it's too hard to teach the power clean.
Okay, so we can get to that section now, because yeah, that's a great question, because you're absolutely spot on that the power clean was a staple for a really long time. And then some people kind of came out and said, like, oh, you don't need to do that. And we'll show you trap bar jumps and this and that and all that kind of stuff. So the reason you would do cleans if you're teaching, like, if you're coaching, your strength coaching for a high school, whatever, you're trying to help your athletes get better in whatever sense. The reason you would do an Olympic lift, pretty, let's say, a power clean, is because it is, like, the – power output, like peak power output, the stuff that like affects your ability to jump higher, run 10 yard sprints faster, you know, all these things that are really helpful, right? Peak power is going to improve your jumping ability, improve your acceleration, your sprinting ability, all that kind of stuff. The most peak power happens at 60 to 80% of peak force, right? Yep. And peak force as measured by your best back squat or best deadlift, all Olympic lifts happen at 60 to 80% of peak force, right? So like they are the single most direct route to peak power output, right? So they're going to like your snatches and your cleans and jerks are all going to happen in that 60 to 80% range, except for maybe a maximal, you know, Olympic level clean, right? Which is probably not going to happen in your high school. Right, might move a little slow, but so they're the most direct route. You can cobble it together by jumping, throwing, lifting fast, all that kind of stuff. You can kind of cobble it together, but if you want efficiency in your program to like get peak power, then you need Olympic lifts. However, they're not easy to teach, right? Okay, let's take that back. They're not hard to teach, right? But they're not simple to teach, right? So they're like easy, but not simple.
Right.
You have to take time. You have to be able to pay attention, right? You have to have like a system of how to do it, right? I like made a course at one point to teach people how to do it. And you could do that. You could teach athletes how to lift like on a whistle, right? We're going to do drill one. We're going to do drill two, you know, all that kind of stuff. You could, if you regiment it like that, it is easy to do, right? But you have to have a really good system in place. You have to have good command of the room. You have to have, you have to trust your athletes. You have to like watch every rep, you know, which is hard to do.
Right.
But if you're willing to do all this stuff and you're able to do that stuff, the benefits for doing it is huge, right? But the last thing I would ever recommend somebody do is say, hey, we're going to do the Olympic lifts in our program, but I have no clue how to teach them, you know, which is like what?
And no time to do it.
Yeah. So I have no clue how to teach them. I'm no good at it, nor do I have any interest in learning, but we're just going to go ahead and do it because I heard it's the best. No, that's a bad idea, right?
Yep. Now, last question, and then I'll, you know, I want to be respectful of your time here, but again, you know, one of my passion projects is coaching some of these kids who really just either they don't like sports just because for whatever reason they have interests that lie elsewhere. They're not comfortable with sports or for whatever reason are just not involved in after school athletics. So for those types of kids or, you know, those kids who become then adults, what might be the utility in learning to weightlift?
Oh, man. Like it is, this is all meters, kilograms, second sports, right? Is like, it is so, I call it like a democratic sport, right? It's input equals output, so it's so satisfying in terms of like, just like I did this, I get this out, you know? I think it's a really right. fair sport, you know, like in terms of your ability. And you're not really – the times you're actually competing against someone else, I can count the number of times that I've actually been competing against someone else in weightlifting. I've been doing it for a number of years. It's like three times, you know? Like there are three times where I was like, I could get first or second at this thing, right? And that, like, you know, that was, you know, a big deal to me, right? So most of the time, you're just competing against yourself, and you could choose to bank it all of the time, right? So I think it's such a cool thing, and I have so many people who lift with me now, who self-identify as never having been an athlete, right? Like,
right.
they're like, right. one of my lifters, super cool dude. He's a like. Molecular biology professor, right? Like had never identified as an athlete, but now is like a very passionate and intent weightlifter, right?
Right. And then I guess my editorial comment there would be that I just find it so much more inspiring to train to something where I'm seeing, you know, personal
yes. goal,
the, you know, really is the kids are seeing it, right? They're seeing growth and they're seeing development and, hey, I couldn't do this. Now I can do it. And to me, that's so much more motivating than, hey, let's be hamsters on a wheel. And when you get tired and sweaty, the workout's done. You know, we'll come back and do it again. No measurement. No, we'd have no idea if we're getting anywhere closer to our goals or not, which I unfortunately see too much at the high school level. So Will, I promised you I would cut it. At 30 geez. Minutes, yeah. and we kind of breezed through a bunch of topics. So hopefully, if people kind of latch on to any one of them, whether it's, you know, structure of a practice, whether it's long-term athletic development or weightlifting specifically within the context of long-term athletic development, where can people go to learn more about what you're doing in beautiful Indiana?
Actually, the place where I post the most stuff is probably just my Instagram account, which is at Will Fleming. And there's one L in Will and one M in Fleming. I also willfleming.com, which you could find, like you could get on my email list, which is where I typically just send out a weekly email just with stuff I'm using and stuff I'm doing and coaching and stuff like that. But those are the two places at Will Fleming on Instagram and then willfleming.com.
Hey everyone, just a quick note before you take off. Head to gymclassstrength.com for all things high school physical education. And of note, I want to point out a new blog post under the Essays and Articles tab concerning the reasons why we should train. I think it sort of separates Gym Class Strength from some of the more traditional conceptions of what we are trying to accomplish in high school physical education. If you read it, I would appreciate it. Give feedback, shoot us an email. Whatever you think is appropriate. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a great one.